Today's daf is Shabbos daf Kuf Mem Aleph, the very last daf in the 20th parak of Masecha Shabbos. Today we're going to discuss starting, we're a little bit behind, but when we start with the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, we're going to get to halachas about moving mukza indirectly, tiltal natsad, tiltal begufo. Then the Gemara is going to have four opinions about scraping dirt off of shoes on Shabbos, and that's going to lead us to a general discussion that ends the parak, really, about shoes on Shabbos, a discussion about removing a shoe from a shoe form on Shabbos, what that says about general halachos of moving muksa items, and then we begin Amir Tashem. We'll see if we get to it today, but the next parak with a discussion of whether it's a violation of muksa or a violation of carrying to hold a child who has a stone, a money, or a pouch on him, whether that's a violation of either muksa or of carrying. So, but we left off on Kuf Mem Amud Beis. We read the Mishnah yesterday, and the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Mem Amud Beis discussed about Gorfim Lefnei Haptam Umsalkun Stadim Ne'arei, that we're allowed to sweep dirt from a feeding trough that's used by an ox that's being fattened to be shechted, and we're allowed to move food over to the side so the food doesn't get ruined. And then we said, but the Chachamim say that it's aser. We don't know what's it. We just said two alachos. We said garfin lefnei apatam, and we said umasalkin letzadin, that you could sweep it out, and we also said move it from one side to the other side. The Chachamim just say that's aser. We don't know what that is. So says the Gemara, Yibayiluhu, Rabbanan Aresha Pligi, or Asefa Pligi. When the Rabbanan say that it's aser, are they talking about the first halacha, about the sweeping, and they ask for sweeping because the avos is going to sometimes be an avos shel karka, and you're going to be mashva gumos, the feeding trough, maybe a feeding trough made out of just karka, when you sweep out karka, so you're going to be mashva gumos, you're going to even out the holes in the ground. So, or is it asefa pligi? Asefa would mean on the idea of moving it from one side to the other, and the issue would be that maybe the food is muktzah if it was already in front of one animal. Maybe it's considered disgusting. It's not even in Meichel Behem anymore because the other animals won't touch it anymore. So maybe it's muktzah at that point. Oh, it's Ravayu Pligir. Maybe they're arguing on both points. So says Gemara Tashma, let's bring a raya from the following. D'tanya, v'chacham momrim echad zeh lo yisal kevin letzadin. Both by the sweeping of the avos and by the moving on from one side to the other, the Chachamim say you're not allowed to do it. So we see that the Chachamim argue on both cases, not on one nor the other, but on both cases. Amar of Chisda Machlokas Bivashal Karka Avol Bivashal Kli Divrei Kol Mutter. The whole Machlokas is only on an avos that's made out of karka. If the feeding trough is made out of dirt, but if the feeding trough is made out of is a kli, it's as an independent kli, then there's no problem. Problem sweeping, you don't have to worry that you're going to be mashvi gumos. The evil shel karka miyikal leman deshari hakam mashvi gumos. I asked the Gemara, well, wait a second, how could it be okay in an evil shel karka? After all, you're being mashvi gumos, meaning we just said that it's a machlokas be evil shel karka. Be evil shel kli, there's no machlokas, everyone holds its mutter, but apparently the Tanakama holds that it's even mutter be evil shel karka. How could that be that Tanakama holds mutter be evil shel karka? Whatever happened to the problem of being mashva gumos. Ela I itmar hachi itmar. Amar av chisa machlokas bivu shal kli. Av bivu shal karka devre kol aser. No, it has to be that the whole machlokas is bivu shal kli. But by bivu shal karka, if the feeding trough is made out of karka, everyone would hold that tzasser on account of mashva gumos. Now Rashi, the way he articulates being mashva gumos in an evil shalkarka is he three lines from the bottom of the page. At the end of the line, he says diikal lemechash laashvuya gumos, that we need to be concerned that you might be mashva gumos. Meaning, sounds from Rashi that even when we're dealing with an evil shalkarka and you're sweeping it out, it's not necessarily so that you are being mashva gumos. It's a legitimate concern that you will be mashva gumos. The difficulty then becomes that if there's a machlokas be evil shel kli, the way the Gemara concludes, that there's even, that the chachamim who say that it's aser would say it's even aser be evil shel kli, then it would turn out that the chachamim say it's aser be evil shel kli. Why? Because you're going to, as Rashi points out in the next Rashi, the gazura ban gezeira atu shel karka. We don't allow sweeping the evil shel kli according to the chachamim, a gezeira lest you come to sweep shel karka. And what's the problem with sweeping shel karka? That's a problem because you might come to be mashvegumos. So isn't this a gzera l'gzera, where it's only in a sedraba in the first place that you might come to be mashvegumos? It's really davar shein miskaven, and l'chora therefore should be mutter. But apparently it's a gzera drabanan that we don't like doing this because you might come to be mashvegumos. It's not a psik reisha according to Rashi. So if it's only if even yivushal karka is only gzera, so how could the chachamim make a gzera l'gzera? So in general, there is a discussion in the Achronim. When we say the Chamar not gozer, gzera l'gzera, what does that mean? Does that mean that typically speaking, the Chamar only gozer on things that are common and things that are a legitimate concern, and the gzera l'gzera generally didn't concern them enough to have to go that far? They weren't so concerned that things are going to be violated to make a gzera l'gzera. Or do we say, no, it's not that they weren't concerned, or that it's an indication of how concerned they were about the issue. The Rabbanon simply don't have the right to make a gzera. V'asu mishmeres l'mishmarti. The Rabbanon are allowed to make a gzera on the Torah, l'mishmarti. But lo mishmeres l'mishmeres. They can't make a gzera on a gzera. Not that they don't want to, not that they don't think it's important, they're simply not allowed to. It's a limit to what the Rabbanon are allowed to do. So if you say, like the first tzad, that they choose yes to or not to based on how big a need it is, so then you see over here, it's not a problem of gzera l'gzera, because we can't ask such kashas. And Tosa says in a few places in Shas, can't ask such kashas. Sometimes the Rabbanon made gzera l'gzera, sometimes they didn't make gzera l'gzera. So then it wouldn't be a problem. But if you hold that the Rabbanon simply were not authorized to make gzera l'gzera, then maybe we have a problem over here of what the of what exactly is going on. There is also, Rav Shachter always points out, there's a difference between a gzera l'gzera on the one hand versus a shvus to shvus on the other hand, meaning sometimes you'll have a double drabanan, you'll have trade drabanan, but that's not necessarily gzera l'gzera. Gzera l'gzera is limited to a case where the second gzera's sole purpose is to prevent you from violating the first gzera. Sometimes you just happen to violate something that's drabanan for two different reasons, that there are two independent dinim drabanan that happen to overlap in certain cases, but it's not that one drabanan is there purely to protect from the other drabanan. Okay, says the Gemara Vayit, now v'notim l'fnei behema. The Mishnah said you're allowed to take from l'fnei behema zu and nosel l'fnei behema zu b'shabbos. You can take food from in front of one animal and put it in front of another animal on Shabbos. So tanachad the notim l'fnei behema shapiya yafav nosel l'fnei behema shapiya ra. So one Tana teaches us that you could take from in front of an animal who has a good mouth and put it in front of an animal that has a bad mouth. But then we have another brace that says you're allowed to take from in front of an animal that has a bad mouth and put in front of an animal that has a good mouth. So what do these terms mean, first of all, and why are the braces contradicting each other about which direction you're allowed to go? And once we understand what good mouth and what bad mouth means, then we'll be able to understand why it is that one brace says you can move it from in front of an animal that has a good mouth to an animal that has a bad mouth. The other brace says the opposite. So both prices are saying the same thing. They're both telling me that you're allowed to take food from in front of a donkey and put it in front of an ox. But you're not allowed to take food from in front of an ox and put it in front of a donkey. Why? The brisa that says you're allowed to take from in front of an animal that has a good mouth, that means that means it has a clean mouth. A donkey that doesn't have saliva that drools all over the food, so you're allowed to take from in front of the donkey who has a good, clean mouth, and you're allowed to put it in front of an animal that has a dirty mouth, that's referring to the ox, the cow, that has a dirty mouth that would drool all over the food, so you're allowed to take it from the donkey to put it in front of the ox, the islariri, because the ox or the cow has all this saliva. The other brisa says that you're allowed to take from in front of an animal that has a bad mouth. That's not talking about an unclean mouth. It's not talking about taking from in front of a cow. It's also talking about taking from in front of a donkey. Why do we call a donkey piara? The chamor de lo daik va'achil. The chamor is considered to be piara because it's not so picky about its food. And we put it in front of a para that's very picky about its food. And therefore, the two are really saying the same thing. The chamor doesn't drool on its food and is not so picky about its food. The para drools all over its food, and is very picky about its food. So here's the problem: if you had it in front of a para, it will be disgusting. And once it's disgusting, it will be disgusting from the food and from the drool. And once it's disgusting, you're not allowed to put it in front of a donkey, because the food will already be ruined by the drool of the donkey. But if you had it in front of the para of the donkey first, so the donkey's not going to ruin the food, and therefore you're allowed to put it in front of the para, even though the para is picky about its food, but it's fine because the food hasn't been drooled on anyway, so it's going to be perfectly fine to put in front of the para. So what about other animals? It just says para, chamar. What about in front of from a dog to a cat or anything else, any other animal? So the Beis Yosef in Siman Shin Chav Dal quotes from the Smag that has this suffix about Shar Behemos, whether you're allowed to take from in front of one and put in front of the other. And the Smak in Simin Reish Samach Beis writes that it's mutter, because the Chum never say in Isser by Shar Behemos. The Chum only say about these two animals of Pia Yafa and Pia Ra. In Darkei Moshe and Sifkan Dalit over there, he quotes that the Mordechai was Masupik about this, but the Bach quotes the Lashon of the Mordechai that it's Aser. Our Mordechai, the way we have it, is that it's Aser, that it's not a suffix, but that it's Taka Aser. Also, the Gemara over here assumes that para is isla riri, that a para has the saliva and will make all the food disgusting. There is a Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Yud Zayin, that a para sheshasa mechatos batel b'me'eha. If a para drinks the para aduma waters, then it's going to become batel in its stomach. So it sounds like when it's in its mouth, it's not yet batel. It's not yet mixing with enough other stuff to make it batel. But if it's isla riri, if it has all the saliva dripping out of its mouth, so it's a kasha. Why is it in fact not batel l'chora? It should be batel in its mouth already. Okay, that's a kasha the Shar Mitzvah Balacha raises over here. So says Gemara the Mishnah now. New Mishnah Kuf Mem Aleph Amar Aleph at the top. Hakasha al gabe amita. If there's straw on a bed, lo yinaneu biyado el menano begufo. The person's not allowed to move the straw with his hand. He could be menaneu begufo. He could lie down on top of the straw, even it out, move it around by rolling around on it, by moving his body on it. But if this straw was Michael Behema, it was animal food, so then it's not muksa. The straw normally we're assuming was used for firewood. If it's being used for firewood, so on Shabbos, that's going to be muksa, obviously. But if it's designated as animal food, so then it's not muksa. Or if you put a sheet over it, so then you're allowed to be minanea biyado. You're allowed to move it directly, because once you put a sheet or a pillow on top of it, you're showing that you don't want to use it as firewood anymore. You want to use it as cushioning for your bed. You want to use it as a mattress. So once that's not muksa, nothing wrong with a mattress on Shabbos. So by putting the kar or the sadin on top of it, that takes away its muksa status. So that's what changes when we say that it's meichel behema, or you put a sheet on it, we're taking it out of the status of firewood, and therefore we're taking away its muktzah status. Says the Mishnah Vayter, next halacha, michbash shel balei batim, matirin avalo kovshin. You can, if there's a press, an iron of balei batim, where they would have these two boards that were on a hinge, and they would push together and press people's clothing, so you're allowed to undo a press that belonged to balei batim, that was used to press clothing, but you cannot put clothing in it on Shabbos to press the clothing on Shabbos, because that would be preparing the clothing for after Shabbos. That's an isra of hachana. Vishal kovsin lo yigabo. And if it's a professional press, if it's a press that's used by launderers, then you're not allowed to touch it. Rabbi Yehuda amir mahayim mutter meir of Shabbos matir's kula v'shomto. Rabbi Yehuda says if it was already undone before Shabbos, so you're allowed to finish undoing it. So again, if it's shalkovsin, you're not allowed to undo, even to undo a launderer's press, because that the assumption is that would be a violation of soser, of destroying it. But if it was already partially opened, then Rabbi Yehuda says you could open it the rest of the way, it's not going to be a problem. So two halachas in this Mishnah. One about straw that's on your bed, that typically we assume is muktzah, and therefore you're only allowed to move it with your guf, not with your hands, unless you dafka make it not muktzah. And the other about an iron, that there's a difference between the iron of balei batim and an iron of kovsin in terms of removing clothing from the iron. So the Gemara takes the first halacha first. Amar Rav Nachman, Hai pugla milamala lamata shari. If a person has a radish stuck in the ground, buried in the ground, so if it's from the top of the radish to the bottom of the radish, it's mutter to pull it out of the ground. Milamata lamala asir. But it's from the bottom of the radish to the top, then it's asir to pull it from the ground. What's this talking about? So Rashi explains that there's the wide end of the radish and the narrow end of the radish. If the radish is buried underground, where the wide end is at the top, so when you pull it out of the ground, you're not moving any of the dirt around it because it's not upsetting any of the dirt. The wide end is at the top, the narrow end is at the bottom, so it'll come out very easily, very smoothly. But if it's buried underground, where the narrow end is at the top, is closer to the surface of the ground, and the wide end is at the bottom, and it's completely buried underground, when you pull it out from under the ground, the wide end is going to upset all the dirt around it as it's boring its way through the ground to come out. And that's a problem of tiltul muktza. You're being metaltel all of that dirt. So Amar Rav Ad Bar Abba, Amri Bei Rav, Tanina Deloka Rav Nachman. Wait a second, our Mishnah is against Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman has a problem with moving dirt as you're pulling a radish out of the ground. Our Mishnah assumes that tiltul min atzad, that when you move something, you move muksa indirectly, like when you roll around on the straw that's on your bed, or when you move a radish and that happens to move the dirt, you're moving it with something else indirectly. Our Mishnah seems to say that it's mutter against Rav Nachman. Hakash al gabi amito lo yinanem biyado aval minano bekufo. Our Mishnah says you're not allowed to move it by hand, but you're allowed to move it with your body. Vim hayimachol behema shoyal of karo sad minano biyado. And if you take away its muksa status by making a machol behema or by putting a sheet over it and showing that you want to use it as a mattress, then you're even allowed to move it by hand. But shema minano. No, but the bottom line is what we see from our Mishnah is tiltul min atzad, lo shmei tiltul. That when you move something min atzad, when you move something in an indirect way, when you move muktza in an indirect way, that's not called tiltul. That's not a problem of muktza. Tosos and Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph asks that over here we say tiltul min atzad is lo shmei tiltul. Over there, Rav himself holds that it's shmei tiltul. So this kasha is asked by all the Rishonim. Tosos, the Rif, the Rush, everyone deals with this question. So and how you answer this question is going to have a profound effect on the halacha. So the majority of Rishonim Tosos suggests that over there the ikur tiltul is bishvil dovera aser. Over there, when we say tiltul min atzad is a problem, it's when you're being metaltal for the sake of something that's aser. Over here, the ikur tiltul is mishum davra mutter, and it's the davra mutter that you're actually being metaltel directly. It's just that, like with the radish, you're moving the radish. That's the davra mutter. There's nothing wrong with the radish. So that's davra mutter. It just happens to be that the only way to move it is by moving the dirt around it as well, derech the radish, by moving the radish. So that's lo shmei tiltul. That's how Tosfos answers, that's how the Rambam answers. The Rush just asks, in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah, how does that work with our Mishnah? By the tiltul of the kash is mukta, and you're moving the kash min atzad by moving your body around, but it's for the sake of the kash, it's for the sake of the straw itself, which is mukta. So don't tell me it's letzorech davar hamutter, it's letzorech davar haaser. So the Rush suggests that in our case it's not even tiltul, because this isn't called tiltul min atzad, this is tiltul begufo. So even though it's letzorech hakash, tiltul begufo is letzorech hakash is like tiltul min atzad letzorech hadavar hamutter. That when you're going to move something with your body, you're not even going to. It's not like you're taking a stick or you're taking a something that's not muktzah and moving something indirectly. You're just moving it with your body. When it's your body that's moving something, you're not manipulating something with your hand. That's not even tiltul min atzad. That's tiltul begufo, and that's better. The Torah writes like the Rush. The Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. Simin Shini Ralf Sufchas Tiltul Muktzah Begufo. Even the tzorech davar muktzah, even for the sake of the muktzah item, is going to be mutter. The question is, how do we define tiltul begufo? Let's say you want to kick something with your feet. Yeah, there's a rock. You want to kick it out of the way. The rock is muktzah. So are you allowed to kick it? Is that called tiltul begufo? The rock is not my hands. The rock is also not my hands, but my feet are not my hands. So is that called tiltul biyado? Or is that called tiltul begufo? What is that called tiltul minatzad? What exactly is that? So the Mishnah writes in Simon Shin Chesiv Kot Yud Gimel, if there's a dover muksa on the ground, you're allowed to kick it. Kadesh lo yavali de hefsid, if there's any need for it, stam to kick it, you shouldn't. But if there's any sort of need to kick it, there's no problem. You're allowed to kick it because that's called tiltul begufo. That's not a problem. The Chazon Ish, however, disagrees. Chazon Ish in Siman Mem Zayin, Sifkat Yud Gimel, says that it's also to be metaltal muktza with your foot. That's not called tiltul me'atzad. That's called tiltul gamur, meaning it's normal to move items with your hand. It's normal to move items with your foot when you kick things. So since those are normal, that's not called tiltul begufo. Tiltul begufo is using your torso or something to move an item, rolling around on it. That's tiltul begufo according to the Chazon Ish. So that's the discussion of how to define the parameters of tiltul begufo. Says the Gemara Vayter. Amar Rav Yehuda. There's another discussion. Rav Zilberstein has a discussion over here. Are you allowed to do tiltul mukta, being mazes offer, for instance, to protect yourself from violating this adaraisa? I mean, what if a person planted seeds in the ground on Shabbos, put seeds in the ground? If he lets those seeds take root, he's going to be in violation of melacha daraisa. Or he could violate tiltul of the afar by pulling those seeds out, and then he'll save himself the isa daraisa. So obviously he shouldn't have planted in the first place, but he did. So now what? Are you allowed to violate the isa darabanan in order to save you from isa daraisa? So there is a very big discussion in the Achronim. When does one violate the isra of zareya? When you put the seeds in the ground before anything has happened, before they've taken root. So the Rashash holds, and many other Achronim as well, that you're not chayiv unless niklat hazera lebasof, unless the zera takes root in the ground, and therefore he quotes here the Beis Shlomo as well in Yardeich El Beis Mukhlof Chavdeis, that just like when you put dough by an oven, if you do rediyas hapas before the dough gets baked, you've avoided the melacha daraisa, so too over here. The Minchas Chinuch, on the other hand, says even if lo yiklat hazera, you're chayiv mishum zareya from the moment you put it in the ground. So it's a question whether you're even gaining anything. Is it even beneficial at all to remove it from the ground? So certainly, if it's not even beneficial, then it wouldn't be. There would be no heter to violate muktza. Similar issue. Rabbi Sol Misalant in Sefer Evin Yisrael, page Pei Aleph, has a suffix. A person accidentally left basar b'chalav cooking from erev Shabbos in the same pot. Is he allowed to remove the pot before he comes to the isra of basar b'chalav? He put basar b'chalav in a pot, put it on the fire, and then Shabbos started. So the pot's muktza. But on the other hand, if he lets it keep cooking, it's going to be violated of Basar B'chalav. So he wants to suggest that maybe it should be similar to Rediyas HaPas, that you're allowed to remove pas, even though it's an Issa D'Rabbanan to remove pas from an oven, you're allowed to do it to avoid the Issa of baking. And he says, no, that's different. Because first of all, maybe the whole reason Chazal allow moving pas is to violate Uvda D'Chol. That's the whole issue of removing pas. Over here, it's Tiltul Muktza. Tiltul Muktza, removing the pot, is a much bigger Isser than Uvda D'Chol. If that's the case, then in our case, where you planted something in the ground and you want to move the dirt, so that's Tiltul Muktza. Maybe we would not be so eager to allow it. The other answer he gives is that when it comes to an Isser, the Rabban were Matir, an Isser Shabbos Rabbanan, so they don't violate an Isser Shabbos D'Araisa, meaning Rediyas HaPas is an Isser Shabbos Rabbanan, so you don't violate Ofa, which is also an Isser Shabbos d'oraisa. But moving a pot, which is nisr Shabbos d'rabbanan, in order to avoid violating basar b'chalav, which has nothing to do with Shabbos, so that Rabbanan never allowed you to cross over from one area of halacha to another, that they wouldn't allow. In which case, in our case of the dirt, so it's all in Isser Shabbos. So then you'd be allowed to move the dirt in order to save yourself from the Isser Shabbos d'oraisa. So it would hinge on those two issues. Number one, did you already violate Zoreya? Is it too late? And number two, even if you didn't already violate Zoreya, how do you understand when the Chacham allowed you to violate the Rabbanan to save you from a d'oraisa? Right in the Gemara, Amar Yudani people, he made the that if a person is chopping vegetables, normally chopping vegetables into tiny pieces is a violation of the melach of tochein. So Rabbi Yehuda holds, if you do two shinois, you do two unusual things, you crush only chada chada, one pepper at a time, and you crush bekasa de sakina with the handle of the knife rather than with the sharp part of the knife, that's mutter by making these two shinuyim. Tarti asur. But if you do two at a time, where it's not crushing one pepper at a time, then it's going to be aser. Rav Amar, kiven de mishani afilu tuvanami. Rav says, no, once you have one shino, you're using the handle of the knife, that's all you need. You don't need multiple shinuyim, and therefore you could do many at a time, as long as you use the handle of the knife. Tosav here quotes in the Shiltos Rav Achai that this is talking about yontif, that we're not even talking about Shabbos over here, we're talking about yontif. Tosav has several kashas on that, namely the whole rest of the sugya and pretty much the mesechta is all about Shabbos, so it's a little odd to throw in a halacha halacha about Yantif without informing us that this is about Yantif, and he has other kashas from other Gemaras as well. And therefore, he says in Nira Lari, the Shari below Shinoi Afil Maduk Shalevin Kishar Tavlin, that if it were Yantif, you wouldn't need any Shinoi. Be Yantif Nira Lari, the Shari below Shinoi. On Yantif, you wouldn't even need a Shinoi. This must be talking about Shabbos, where normally it's a violation of Tochein, but a double Shinoi according to Rav Yehuda and a single Shinoi according to Rava would suffice to be permitted to do it. Amar Rav Yehuda, man desachi b'maya, if a guy was swimming in the water, he was getting soaked in the water, lignev nafshe b'resha v'hada lislik, he should first dry himself out and then start walking outside of the water, because we're concerned that he's going to end up walking four amos in a carmelis, and he's going to be carrying all that water on his body. That's the concern. So ihachi sofrektimar. That's the concern. Kikanachas nami kadachi kocha dalaramos vaasir. Even when he's in the water, so just by moving around, he's moving the water within the river dalaramos, because the water is he's aggravating the water and he's moving it. Says gemar kocha b'carmelis lo gazu. That's just alide. Kochav, and we are not gozer an iser of moving something with kochav, carrying with kochav in a karmelis. Keep in mind, it's only a karmelis, only to Rabbanan, so b'kochav it's not a problem. Ask the Rush a very fundamental question. If you're soaking wet, it's telling us, you got to dry yourself off before you walk in a karmelis, in what would be Rosh Hashanah d'Rabbanan, not even Rosh Hashanah d'Oraisa, in a karmelis, because it's like carrying the water d'Alam Rosh Hashanah. How come you're allowed to walk outside when it's raining? When you walk outside when it's raining, aren't you getting soaking wet and therefore carrying all that water around? And when do you get wetter? When it's pouring rain and you're fully clothed? Or when a person was bathing and they have some water dripping from their body? So the Rush says that there's more water when you come out of the bath than there is when you're walking around in the rain. Question is the metzias. Is that really true? Person walking around with his clothing gets drenched. So there's so much more water that he's able to carry around, absorbed in his clothing. So that's what the Taz wonders in Simon Shin Chavav Sivkat and Beis. Einenu Roos, that's not true. That there's more water when it's raining and you get soaked from the water than when there's just on your body from the ruchitza. So in Har Tzvi, Rasi Pesach Frank says no. The Beis Yosef, when he talks about the difference in the amount of water, is not talking about the water soaked in your clothing. That water is bottled to the clothing. That's bottled to the begadim. Remember, we had a while ago on Sadi Gimel and Beis, someone is motzi ochlim pachos mikashir in a kli. He's potter afala kli. He's potter for carrying out the ochel because the ochel is pachos mikashir, and he's potter for the kli. Why is he potter for the kli? He's carrying a kli. No, because the kli is batel to the ochel. The ochel is the ikker. So when you have water soaked in clothing, the assumption is that the clothing is still the ikker and the water is batel. So that water you wouldn't be chayav for carrying. You're only chayav for carrying the rest of the water that's dripping on your body. So, either way, what we do see from the Gemara is a person has to make sure that their body is as dry as possible when they're walking in public. The Shar Mitzvah Balach discusses what if a person goes to the mikvah on Shabbos morning, chassid goes to the mikvah on Shabbos morning, and he's got long peyus where there's a lot of water dripping from his peyus. You know, it's not that he's got a lot of hair there, so there could be a lot of water dripping from that area. Okay, so the Chassidish Post can deal with this Gemara, try to figure it out. Amar Abai Vitem Rav Yehuda, Titch al gabe raglo mekancho b'karcho vein mekancho b'kosel. If a person has dirt on his feet, he can wipe it in the ground, but not on a wall. Amar Rav Maitaim b'kosel, what's the problem with scraping it off on the wall? Mishum demechsi kabonin. That looks like bona, like you're adding onto the wall. Habinyin chaklahu. That's a very primitive form of bona. Is that really something that looks like bona? El amar Rav mekancho b'kosel vein mekancho b'karcho. No, the opposite. You're allowed to be mekaneach on the wall, but not on the karka. What's the problem with the karka? When you scrape the dirt off on the karka, we're afraid it's going to lead to being mashve gumos, to evening out the karka. Itmar mabrid ravina amar echad zav echad zav asr. Mabrid ravina is a third opinion. It's asr to scrape it off on the ground or on a wall. So far we had three opinions. One said the wall is okay, the ground is not. The other said the ground is okay, the wall is not. And now that they're both asr. And fourth opinion, Rav Papa amar echad zav echad zav mutr. They're both fine on the wall, on the ground, it's all okay. According to Marbury de Ravina, so how are you supposed to be mekaneach? How are you supposed to scrape off the dirt from your shoes if it's also to scrape it on the wall and it's also to scrape it on the floor? Strange question. Why do we assume that it's necessarily there has to be a way? Maybe there's taka no way. Maybe it's just aser. So the Bach raises that kasha. That what's the Gemara's question? He says the lashon gives it away. He didn't say aser lekaneach. He said echad zeh ve'echad zeh aser. That both of the options that we have suggested are aser, which implies that there's some other option that's mutter. Otherwise, he just would have said aser lekaneach. So what is that mutter way? Mekanechile bekara. You could use a beam to scrape it on the beam. Amar Rav Lolesa. That if a person is sitting in a mavoi, so there are two ways we're going to see at the very beginning of Masech Serevin, there are two ways to permit carrying inside of a mavoi, inside of an alleyway that has chatzeros and button that open up into the alley. One way is by having a kora, having a beam run across the entrance of the mavoi, and the other way is by having a pole, a lechi, at the entrance of the mavoi to remind you not to go past it. There's a discussion in the Gemara, in the first parak of Erevin, are these makeshift mechitzos? Do we view these as halachic mechitzos on the fourth side? Or maybe it's just a hecker. It's just something there to remind you not to go any further. Either way, a person should not sit right by the edge of the lechi. Because if you're sitting right by the edge of the lechi, you might drop something. It will roll out into the Rosh Hashanah, and you'll go pick it up from the Rosh Hashanah and bring it back. And that's going to be a problem, obviously. Vamarava, lo litzadinish kuva, dilma asi la shvuye gumos. Rava also says Rava says a person not only shouldn't sit by a lechi, you shouldn't rock a barrel to put it in place on the ground, to move it around, to set it into place on the ground, because we're afraid when you're setting the barrel into place on the ground, you're going to be mashva gumos. V'amarav, lo lahadik inish udra v'puma deshisha, dil ma'asi l'dei schita. A person shouldn't stick wet wool into the mouth of a jar, the opening of a jar, because that too could be maybe l'dei schita. That could come to schita. That's the third statement of Rava. Now, whenever we have schita, we always say we have to look at what kind of schita is this. Schita could be asur for two reasons. It could be asur mishum mefarik, mishum dash, or it could be asur mishum libun. So here you're talking about wet wool in the mouth of a jar. So what are we worried about? So pashtus is we're not dealing with libun over here. We're talking about the schita mishum mefarik, that when it gets squeezed in the mouth of the jar, some of it is going to drip down into the jar and be saved and be usable. Whatever is being squeezed out is going to be usable, and that's whenever it's not holich li'ibud and it's not cleaning out the beggar that it's being squeezed from, that's schita mishum dash. If it's cleaning out the beggar that it's being squeezed from, that's schita mishum melabein. So pashtus is over here, it's mishum dash, and the whole of the barrel is at the top of the barrel, not at the bottom. If it were at the bottom, it were a spigot at the bottom that you're sticking into, so whatever you're squeezing out would land on the ground, and that would not be a violation of schita. If it's at the top, like by an orange juice container, let's say, where it has that little hole at the top and you stuff something in there, so then whatever drips will drip right into the bottle, and that's going to be a violation of schita mishum dash. Amar Rav Kana, tich al gabe bigdo. If a person has dirt on his clothing, he could scrape it from the inside of the clothing, but not from the outside of the clothing. That's going to be a violation of malabin. But didn't we learn in Brisa that if you have dirt on your shoe, so you can use the back of a knife to scrape it off, but if it's on your clothing, you can use your fingernail to scrape it off. But you can not be mechaschis, you can't scrape it well, you can't rub it out well. My love shalei chaschis klal is then implied that any sort of kiskus, whether it's from the inside or the outside, it's no good. And we just said that as long as you do it from the inside of your beggar, it's fine. So lo shalei chaschis mi b'chutz al mi b'fnim. No, we just mean to say you shouldn't be mechaschis mi b'chutz. Rather, you should do mi b'fnim. Amar Rabbi Vavar, Amar Blazer, Amar Biane. Megarin min al chadash avalo yashan. One is allowed to scrape a new shoe, but not an old shoe, because we assume with an old shoe, when you scrape it, you're going to be taking off some of the shoe itself, and that's going to be a violation of memachik. They're going to be scraping the shoe smooth. Ba'memegarro, what are we megarro it with? Amar Rabbi Avo, begav sakin, with the handle of a knife, with the back of a knife. He said you should get rid of whatever you just taught in place of what the following braisa. You're not allowed to scrape. It's not like we said before that it's okay to scrape a new shoe, just not an old shoe. No, lo min al chadash ve lo min al yashan. Not only that, you're also not allowed to put oil on your foot while your foot is in the shoe or in the sandal, because that's going to be ma'abe the or, the leather, it's going to be tanning the leather of the shoe or the sandal when you're putting oil on your foot and your foot is already in a shoe. What you can do is you can put oil on your foot and then put your foot in the shoe, that's fine. And you could put oil all over your body and then roll around on a leather mat. You don't have to worry that that vein ochoshish. You don't have to worry that that's being ma'abe the mat. That's only if the purpose is to shine it. Avala abdo aser. But if you're doing it to tan the leather, then even if you put it on your body and then you roll around on the mat, or you put it on your foot and then you stick it in the shoe, but you're trying to tan it, that's going to be aser. Says Mar Avdo Pshita. Obviously, tanning is an issur d'orai, so of course you can't do that. Says Mar Vesu. And furthermore, Latzachsko Miikaman Deshari. Is it really mutter to shine the shoe or to shine the mat on Shabbos? Eli Yitmar Hachi Yitmar. How much oil can you use when you put it on your body before you roll on the mat, when you put it on your shoe before you stick it in the, when you put it on your foot before you stick it in the shoe? The amount of oil that normally would be used for shining, not the amount of oil that would be used for ibud. But certainly if your kavana is li'ibud, then it's going to be aser. If your kavana is l'tzachzich, it's going to be aser. You're just treating your foot, you're treating your body, and that's okay as long as it's a sheer l'tzachzich. A katan can't go out with a large shoe, but he's allowed to go out with a large shirt, meaning we assume if the shoe doesn't fit, he'll take it off and carry it. But a large shirt, he's not going to remove his shirt. A woman should not go out with a torn shoe, because we assume she'll take that off as well, and she also can't do chalitza with a torn shoe. But if she does do chalitza with a torn shoe, then it's going to be a kashra chalitza. Fractosos, why we make a gzerim, perak mitzvah chalitza, minalatu minal merupat, kivan de dievet chalitzasak shera. We made a gzerim lest you come to use a torn shoe in the Gemara Nivamas. But over here we're saying a torn shoe is actually kasher b'dievet. Why would we make a gzerim lest you come to use it if when you actually use it, it's kasher? So he says there's torn and there's torn. If it's torn a little bit, it's kasher. If it's very torn, then it's pasul. Ve'in yotzim minal chadash, you're not allowed to go out with a new shoe. Be'ezim minal amru, what kind of shoe are we talking about? B'minal shalisha, a woman's shoe. Tani bar kapar lo shana lo shali yatsu bo shayach mi bo yom of yatsu mi bar shabbos mutter. That's only if you never went out with it before Shabbos. But if you already used it before Shabbos, then it's going to be mutter. Tani chada shomtin minam al gabi imos v'tani yidach ein shomtin. So a new issue. We have a steer between two brises. One brise says you're allowed to remove a shoe from a shoe form on Shabbos. When they would make a shoe, they would make it over a form that was a piece of wood pretty much in the shape of a foot. And the other brise says you're not allowed to remove the shoe from the shoe form. So which is it? Says Marlo Kasha. Harib Lazar, Harabanan. One is the sheet of Rab Lazar, one is the sheet of Rabbanan. We're going to find that Rab Lazar and the Rabbanan disagree when the shoe is considered a kli. When is the shoe considered finished? So if you hold that the shoe is a kli, it's not mukta. Even when it's on the form, it's not mukta. If you hold the shoe is not yet a kli until it's off the shoe form, then it's already mukta when it's on the form. It's still mukta when it's on the form. You wouldn't be allowed to remove it. Ditnan minel shal gabe imus. If you have the shoe on the shoe form, Rabbi Eliezer mitaher. Rabbi Eliezer says it's not a kli. It's tar. It's not yet susceptible to tumah. It's not a kli. The chum mitamim. The chum say it's tameh, which means it is a kli, and therefore what comes out is Rabbi Eliezer's kula and hilchas tumah v'tahara is his chumra. In Hilchos Muktzah, because if it's not a kli, it's Muktzah. The Chum say it's Tamei because it is a kli, and therefore it's not Muktzah. So that's the difference. If you hold it's Muktzah, you can't remove it. If you hold it's not Muktzah, you can remove it. This works out very well according to Rav Holtz that a kli shemlach to the iser, whether it's l'tzarach kufa, whether it's l'tzarach mekomo, you're allowed to move a kli shemlach to the iser. So then it works out very well. You're allowed to move the shoe form because you need the makom that the shoe form is taking up, namely the inside of the shoe. And according to the chachamim, it's not muksa, so you're allowed to do that. But according to Abaye, even if you hold like the chum that the shoe is not muksa, how are you allowed to move the shoe form? Isn't that muksa? And you're not allowed to move it, litzorach mekomo, which is what you're doing it for. So achamayaskinun berafoy. Now it's talking about where it's loosely fitting on the form, and therefore when you remove the shoe, you're actually not moving the form. You're only only removing the shoe. So according to the Chacham, the shoe's not muktzah, it's fine. The Tanya Rabbi Domer, Mahayir Rafoi Mutter. If it's loosely fit, it's going to be Mutter. Says Mar Taima the Rafoi. Hello, Rafoi Lo. But now the Kasha is going to go the other way. The implication is if it were tightly on the form, you would not be allowed to move it. So now it works out great according to Abaye. Honey, Chalabai Domadavar Shamachal, Shapir. If you hold like Abaye that you're not allowed to move muktzah, Litzarach Makom, I understand why when it's tightly fitting on the form, even if you hold the shoe's not muktzah, you're not allowed to take it off because you're going to be moving the shoe form, Litzarach Makom, and that's no good. El Rava, Dam Vein Litzarach Kufa, Vein Litzarach Makom, Mutter, Mayir Rafa, if you la Rafa Inami. But if you hold like Rava that you're allowed to move muktzah, Litzarach Makom, even if it's not loosely fit, it's very tightly fit, what's the problem? Remove the shoe, you're moving the shoe form, no big deal. The shoe form is the tzaruch makoma. It's taking up the space of the inside of the shoe. And so Gemara, he Rabbi Yehuda mishum Rabbi Elazar who the Tanya Rabbi Yehuda mishum Rabbi Elazar im hayi rafoi mutter. That Rabbi Yehuda assumed like Rabbi Elazar that if it's rafoi, that it's mutter. Rabbi Elazar again is the one that held that the shoe is not yet complete, and therefore, but if it's rafoi, it's mutter because that's going dafka like that das yachid that im hayi rafoi mutter. Okay, we'll pick up the next part tomorrow.